Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us for the second hour of the show on this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. First, we'll meet Marine vet Andrew Fink. He's served and plans to keep serving. Then we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games, and Gil and Skip will present The Border in a Book. So it's a pleasure to welcome Marine vet Andrew Fink. He has served our nation in uniform, and he plans to keep serving in a different way. Welcome, Andrew. Thanks for joining us.
Danny, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Andrew, start by telling us about your time in uniform. When and why did you join? Where'd you serve? What'd you do?
When I was a little boy, my great-grandpa died, and he had served in the Army during World War II, including fighting at the Battle of the Bulge. And my mother's cousin, so I guess that makes him my first cousin once removed, but you know, a generation ahead of me, was a Marine, probably sergeant, maybe staff sergeant at the time. And he spoke at the funeral. The main eulogy was given by my mother's other cousin, my cousin Gary, who was an Air Force colonel at the time. But it was when my cousin Tim stood up there in his dress blues and simply told the story of the Battle of the Bulge and said that he was grateful that his grandpa had come back, that I really started to understand what service was like. And of course, that impression of a clean-cut, non-commissioned officer of Marines was a lasting one. If you then go to 9/11, I was 16 years old. I started to think, well, maybe I need to serve myself. But I was, you know, in high school and too young, of course, at the moment. And when the Iraq war started, there really wasn't a huge recruitment effort, because as I'm sure you remember, Denny, Rumsfeld and other leaders had a concept of a smaller, lighter military. But when I was in law school a few years later, the surge was going on in Iraq. There was a recruitment mission out there. And I remembered that there were lawyers in the military. And so the needs of the military, the needs of the Marine Corps, and my desire to serve there finally sort of lined up in a way that was, in my mind, inescapably sensible for somebody who had always felt called to serve. And so that's kind of how it all came together and why it was the Marine Corps in particular.
That makes total sense. And you're right. That is a somewhat typical story of people who did join the military. Family member that made an impression of patriotic culture in their family. Yeah, I mean, that makes totally sense. Where did you serve when you were on active duty?
Well, by the time I was on active duty, so I signed my contract in 2008 when the surge was again still happening and George Bush was the president. But by the time I was out of the training pipeline, you know, fully, it was like 2012 and the tempo had really come down. And so I wound up being stateside my entire time, which was not what I expected, but it's something I had to kind of come to accept would be the reality. And I was base personnel at Quantico. So, you know, all Marine officers except those who go to Navy go through Quantico for OCS. So I did that. Then we were all there for the basic school. I went to Naval Justice School in Newport and was base personnel at Quantico for a while. And then when I got off active duty, I did two more years in the reserves at Great Lakes Naval Station in North Chicago.
You know, that's a quite typical service thing for people who entered about the time you did, isn't it? A lot of people did that.
Yeah, we were joining the military. We thought kind of under one set of circumstances, wound up serving under others. But of course, that's both part of your training, you know, to improvise, adapt, and overcome, to adjust to the circumstances. And nobody promised me I'd go to Iraq. Nobody promised me I'd have any particular experience except that I would serve my country and lead Marines. And that absolutely happened. So that promise was fulfilled.
Okay. What have you done since you got out?
I've primarily been an attorney. So I got off active duty in 2014. And did almost 7 years of full-time private practice, but I was elected to the legislature in 2020. And so I've been serving in the State House of Representatives since January of 2021.
You live in Michigan, right? So we're talking Michigan?
That's right. Yeah. So I was born and raised in Ypsilanti, where my dad was a sheriff's officer, and my mother primarily stayed home with us. And my dad's dad was a judge, and one of his brothers was. So it's kind of a legal family. My dad went to law school at night. So when I got off active duty, I wound up practicing law with my dad, my cousin, and my uncle in Ann Arbor. And then I opened a satellite office out here in Hillsdale. And I now serve Hillsdale County, Branch County, and a small portion of Lenawee County in the State House of Representatives. probably my most important role, for at least for my caucus, we're in the minority right now, but my most important role is to serve as minority vice chair of the Judiciary Committee, where many legal issues, whether they be adjustments to criminal law or the functioning of courts or, you know, some sort of property issue, many of those important issues come through the Judiciary Committee.
That makes total sense. And it's really important that our state governments are well run. This is the election time when we're all focused on the national election. But state governments are really important too, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, really, this is something that I probably fully came to grips with when I was in law school. But much of the fundamental American system of government still relies on the state governments. The federal government, of course, national defense, as Denny, I know you and your listeners know as well as anyone, is a basic responsibility of the federal government. But much of the rest of what we think of as our system of government, you know, be it the criminal law or contracts or property law, all of these ways in which we really live our day-to-day lives, those are still matters of state law. So the state government is, in many senses, kind of the most basic unit of government in the country, although the federal government, of course, is what kind of holds us all together, or at least that's the constitutional scheme that we're under, is one in which the federal government is the, you know, the one that does national defense and these matters of national importance. But much of what we think of as our basic legal system is state-based.
Okay. And you're getting ready. You want to serve our country again. You are running for office. Talk to us about what's your goal now.
Well, I'm running for the state Supreme Court. So this is, of course, the highest court in Michigan. Matters of Michigan law. That's the court of last resort. And, you know, it's a different opportunity to serve. It's one in which may be somewhat similar to different roles in the military. Not everybody is sort of prepared for. But I thought that it was similar to when I decided to join the military, a good match of kind of my experience and skills and this opportunity. I've practiced law in many areas of law. Even when I was in the Marines, I was largely doing legal assistance, which required me to have sort of a diverse legal practice, helping Marines and sailors get ready for deployment by helping them prepare their estate planning documents or what have you. And then, of course, my experience in the State House of Representatives, also a broad exposure to different areas of law. And my practice experience has included appearing in courts across the state, including the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. All of this to say that I think it's a good way for me to serve my neighbors again in a new capacity, in a way that not everybody is sort of ready to do, but I think I'm well prepared for and excited for the opportunity to help make the legal system in Michigan dependable and reliable for the citizens, which is really the most important function that the courts play for the average citizen.
Yes, sir. It's my observation, and I taught American government at local college for 15 years, that most people don't have a clue what the Supreme Court, particularly in the state, does. So having people there that we are a constitutional republic, we're not a democracy. We need to follow our national constitution, and our state needs to follow our state constitution. And that's not something most citizens understand. At least that's my observation. Do you agree?
Yeah, Dan, I mean, as you and I have spoken about it before, the separation of powers is really a fundamental idea in American government. It's certainly present in the federal constitution. It's perhaps even more explicit in the state constitution. And people get it when you talk to them, but it's not always front of mind. So it is oftentimes a conversation that needs to happen because it's not already sort of held in the mind of everyday people as they're kind of going about their business for good reason, but it's still important.
Andrew, before I let you go, how can listeners who'd like to learn more or plug in or help you in your campaign, how can they reach you?
The easiest thing to do is to go to the website, which is thinkformichigan.com. You can also find us on social media at ThinkForMI on the various platforms. And we'd be excited to, you know, answer any questions. If people want to get involved, we'd love to help. And I appreciate the opportunity, Denny, to share that with people.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for sharing today. Thank you for your service to our nation. And thank you for your love of our nation and wanting to serve more.
It's been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Next, we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends, troops. Go halfway down each time. Do about 50. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. It's time to switch to Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you access to all three major networks. keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support the First and Second Amendment, the sanctity of life, our military veterans, and first responder heroes. Just go to patriotmobile.com/frontlines. Get a free month when you use the offer code FRONTLINES.
The Iraq War is more than 20 years old, and troops are still on the ground in Iraq. But why?
For too long, lawmakers have sent American troops to Iraq and beyond in support of vague missions that don't tie to a vital national interest.
At Concerned Veterans for America, we're translating our unique experiences as veterans to call for a better foreign policy that makes Americans safer and more prosperous.
Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. And it is Service Academy football time. I'm joined, of course, by our football co-host, Air Force vet Quentin Roberts. Welcome, Quentin. How you doing, brother?
Danny, I am doing very well as we are in kind of the dog days of the season. There are some exciting games and a lot to talk about with Service Academy football.
There is indeed. And I appreciate your perspective since you played varsity for Air Force all 4 years.
3-year letterman there, really played the last 2 years. But yes, it is a, you know, because here's what happens, Danny, is they're still students. So they still have to go to class. Then tests start happening kind of in around October, right around this point. You know, and that's when you get fluctuations, really. Injuries start piling up. What happens to these teams? They start figuring some things out. So they really aren't the same team at the end of the season as they were at the beginning of the season. And this is the time of the year where they're having buys and making changes, reevaluating some things. And so these teams are constantly changing and evolving to become the best versions of themselves.
Amen, brother. That's certainly my observation. Okay, last weekend, Army hosted UAB and won 44-10. That's a pretty good win.
Danny, all of the Black Knights wins are impressive these days as they move to 6-0 in the season, 5-0 in the AAC. And let me back up and say one other thing. Army and Navy are both ranked in the AP top 25, I think for the first time since 1960, I read. Army is ranked number 23 and Navy is ranked number 25. And it was the Black Knights who hosted the University of Alabama at Birmingham Blazers. And the Blazers had a long, disappointing ride home as they took it on the chin, 44-10 by the Black Knights. It was a beautiful, sunny autumn day at famed Mikey Stadium. And Army just really jumped out on them and didn't give them a chance. They jumped out to a 34-3 halftime margin and set it on cruise control from there. As they dispatched the Blazers in fine fashion, the Blazers had that cannon sound ringing in their ears as they rolled down the tarmac heading back to Alabama. The Black Knights were led by, of course, quarterback Bryson Daly, having an absolutely sensational season, accounting for 5 touchdowns, 4 rushing and 1 passing. And he threw for 102 yards and ran for 100. When you run for 100 and pass for 100, that's separating yourself and really becoming a big timer. He's the first Army rusher with 4 rushing touchdowns in a game since Kelvin Hopkins did it in 2018. The defense set the tone for the day on the opening series of the game, forcing a turnover on downs. The Blazers went for it on 4th-and-1 and were stuffed by linebacker Elo Madozi. The defense also has held their opponents to 21 or less points in the last 11 games dating back to October of 2023. And safety Casey Larkin recorded the first 2 interceptions of his career. Tell you what, Danny, when you look at the stats, it was all Army, 515 to 303 in total offensive yards. UAB had 2 turnovers to Army 0, and in time of possession, Army dominated with 35 minutes to UAB's 25 minutes. So that's the way it was, Denny, in Mikey Stadium.
Amen, brother. Navy had a bye. Air Force played New Mexico and lost 52-37.
They sure did, Denny, in a real shootout. And let me tell you, you can probably count the time since I've been affiliated with Air Force football going back to the mid-80s. Can count it on one hand the times that Air Force has lost to New Mexico. It does not happen often, but this year is just not a good one for Air Force football as they dropped to 1-5 on the season, 0-3 in the Mountain West Conference. They lost to New Mexico in a shootout, 52-37. It was an old West shootout, and Air Force ran out of bullets first. The Falcons had his best offensive game of the season, however, racking up a season-high 474 yards of total offense, including 325 yards on the ground and 149 through the air. But while the offense had one of their best games, the defense had one of its worst. After they forced a 3-and-out on their opening possession, the Lobos scored on their next 7 possessions, in addition to a punt return for a touchdown. So, you know, you look at this game, and on paper, Air Force actually outgained New Mexico 476-438. But they did have 1 turnover, and they had more time of possession, 36 minutes to New Mexico's 24. Usually, those kind of numbers show an Air Force victory, but, you know, the defense just has to step up as the offense changed quarterbacks, and it was the first start for sophomore quarterback Quentin Hayes, and he acquitted himself well, and perhaps this could be a turning point for Air Force as it looks like they're starting to get their ground game on court. So, you know, of course, the schedule doesn't get any easier, but, you know, perhaps they found something that they can turn to from here on out.
Yes, sir. Coast Guard had a bye, and Merchant Marine beat MIT 21-0.
The defense pitched a shutout. Always impressive when the defense pitches a shutout. As they forced 2 fumbles, had 1 interception, and allowed just 125 total yards, as Merchant Marine did defeat MIT 21-0. Now, you know, before you just say, well, it was MIT, MIT scored 52 points just a week prior to against Coast Guard. So, you know, Merchant Marine really, really put the clamps down on MIT and moved to 4-1 on the season and 2-1 in the conference.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. We're talking Service Academy football. Okay, this weekend, Army's at East Carolina.
Yes, Denny, our Army is back in action at Mikey Stadium. Again, taking their undefeated and ranking of number 23 in the country and welcoming the East Carolina Pirates to Mikey Stadium. Army is favored by 17. It's on ESPN2 at noon Eastern. If you want to see good football, you want to check in.
Well said. Navy is versus Charlotte.
Yes, UNC Charlotte. And Navy is favored again by 17. That one will be at 3:30 on CBSN Sports Network. You know, again, Navy is really rolling. UNC Charlotte is going to, they're not a bad team. And they have only, I think, lost 1 in the conference so far. So, you know, if Navy can come out and continue to play good football, which I expect them to do, especially coming off of a bye, to have gotten healthy, I expect the midshipmen to roll.
Well said. And Air Force versus Colorado State. Man, that's a standard heavy competition, isn't it?
It is. Oftentimes a grudge match. And there's no love lost between these two schools. Air Force, of course, 1-5, 0-3 in the conference. Colorado State, 3-3 overall, 1-0 in the conference. Colorado State is favored by 7.5 points. The game is in Colorado Springs. If Air Force has indeed found their recipe, found that quarterback, namely, and found some answers in the running game, perhaps this we could show that they are building upon what they found in the New Mexico game and ride that to a victory over Colorado State. But until you do it, you know, it's you haven't done it. And so we'll have to see if the Falcons can come through.
My guess is that they will. Okay.
I like your optimism, Denny. I like it.
Coast Guard versus Salve Regina.
Yes, Denny, Salve Regina travels to Coast Guard. Salve Regina is 3-0, Coast Guard 3-1. Should be a very good game. I mean, Salve Regina is the reigning champion of the conference, and so Coast Guard's going to have the work cut out, as again, they gave up 52 to MIT. So that defense is going to have to find some answers in order to shut down Salve Regina.
And Merchant Marine versus Norwich.
Yes, Denny. Again, Merchant Marine 4-1, defense playing at a high level. Norwich is 0-5. So I don't expect this to be much of a game. I take Merchant Marine. I couldn't even find a line for this game. It's Merchant Marine by a lot. So we should have good news to report after this game.
Thank you, Quentin. I really enjoy doing this together. We'll be back at it again next week, brother.
Denny, that sounds like a plan. I'm looking forward to it. Enjoy the slate of games for this weekend.
Indeed. Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, we're joined by General Chris Petty. Welcome, bro. Glad you're part of the team. This is fun.
Glad to be here. Let's talk about a battle.
You know, how about let's pick a battle from before the time there was a United States of America.
Okay, let's do that. How about Hastings in October of 1066?
The British were sort of involved in that, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. In fact, it's you could say this is the battle that created sort of that modern British or England, you know, modern England that changed. Uh-huh.
Okay, take us there, bro. The Battle of Hastings, 1066.
Okay, so this is Anglo-Saxon England under King Harold Godwinson versus the Normans. This is the Norman Conquest. Everyone's heard of the Norman Conquest. Well, this is it. This is the beginning of it. And they're led by Duke William of Normandy, which is in northern France, as you know. And after this, he became William the Conqueror. So your listeners have heard of William the Conqueror, and they've heard of the Norman Conquest. Well, 1066 is the opening act of the whole play. So I always say, why should we know this battle? And it's not a U.S. battle. But this really kind of determined even U.S. history, you could say, because it's the battle that changed England forever. I mean, it shaped the English-speaking world and really made England stronger and more unified to emerge on the world stage. And, of course, it's just one of the most famous battles in world history, so everyone should know it. So that's why. Now, let me give you that quick rundown like I try to do. So in January 1066, we're going way back in the Wayback Machine here. King Edward is the King of England. King Edward the Confessor was his name. He died with no heirs to the throne. Now, in this period in England, that's a real crisis. You know, everyone's competing for the crown. And so the Witan, which is the Council of Noble and Priests, elects the strongest noble in England to replace him. His name is Harold Godwinson. So Harold becomes the king. But it was quickly disputed, as you can imagine, by three primary people. His brother, Tostig, which we'll talk about, The second was Harald Hardrada, the king of Norway, based on promises made by a previous king. And the third and most significant was Duke William of Normandy, based on promises made by Edward himself, and actually Harald too, which it's a long story. I can't get into all that. But Harald knew that William was going to invade. It was clear. So he prepares for the invasion during the spring and summer of 1066, but it never comes. He doesn't know that William can't get across the channel because winds are unfavorable. So he has to disband his militia. You know, how many times in history has the militia time clock influenced war? I mean, I think of President Lincoln prior to Bull Run. He tells his general, go south to Richmond because the militia's expiring. So he had the same problems. His feared, as it was called, the militia, had to go home. So as luck would have it, a week later, Hardrada and Tostig, his brother, unite and attack up north near York. Harald gathers his loyal housecarls, as they're called, heavily armored, you know, knights, basically, marches up north, surprises Hardrada at Stamford Bridge, kills both leaders, so the threat from the north is gone. Now, while he's celebrating, Duke William lands on the southern shore near Hastings, because, again, he had to wait for winds. As soon as they were favorable, he crossed. So now Harald has to rush south with a portion of his army. He stops in London only for 5 days to gather enough troops, moves south, meets William near Hastings, and the two sides form for battle on 14 October. Harald's infantry forms on a hill. He's all infantry. He only has infantry, some archers, but not much. So he forms his famous shield wall. You can picture the shield wall at this time because you've all seen movies and things. William's army forms opposing him, coming up the hill in three ranks. Archers, followed by infantry, followed by heavy cavalry. So William has combined arms working in his favor. So the battle starts with archers, but they're firing uphill against a shield wall. It doesn't do much damage. William moves forward with his infantry. They are stymied against the shield wall. The cavalry can't even break the shield wall. But on one assault, and this thing lasts from 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, so it's a slugfest. But on one assault, William's left wing retreats, and the Saxons pursue them down the hill. Now they're vulnerable away from the shield wall, so William comes in and destroys that portion of the force, and then more attacks follow, and then famously in the last, historians debate whether it was a feigned attack or a real one, or a feigned retreat, again, the left side of William's formation withdraws. They draw the Saxons off the hill, a lot of them, and it's a bigger defeat because they're surrounded and killed. Now, the final attack. Archers, again, he leads off with archers. William does. An archer strikes the king and kills him, strikes him in the right eye. And then he does this final assault. And eventually, just through sheer attrition and the mobility of the cavalry just coming and coming, the Saxons collapse. The king is dead. And William the Conqueror becomes the king of England. And he's crowned in London, you know, a week or so later. And thus starts the history of the brand new country of England as we know it today. You know, you got the Normans are dominant and the Anglo-Saxons are peasants and, you know, not in government. And it takes like 100 years for the culture to unite and form a strong country. But big battle in history, really good to know, exciting stories.
It is. And if Britain hadn't gone through that, that was the Britain that basically formed the United States, laid the roots, was a different country than the one that evolved because this battle was fought.
That's right. In fact, what it really did is it moved England, even though, like I said, it took about 100 years to create a unity in the country because the Normans were pretty heavy-handed rulers, you could say. But it took England from a weak monarch and strong noble model to a strong monarch, weaker noble model, which really let them concentrate power and become active in European affairs and wars. And so it really changed the shape of the country.
That's literally true. I mean, obviously England physically shape didn't change, but almost everything else did.
Yeah. And both sides were Vikings. I mean, this is all Viking, you know, roots from that formed these trees, so to speak. on both the Anglo-Saxons and the Normans. The Normans were Vikings that settled in Normandy. So all these Vikings come together finally and start creating really an England.
Indeed. And you made a good point when you talked about the fact that the king initially had basically part-time soldiers. We'd call them guard or reserve or something like that.
Yeah.
And they couldn't stay forever because they had farms to till and families to feed and everything else. They weren't full-time in the sense of 24/7, 365.
That's right.
You get them for a couple of weeks or a month or two, and then they got to go.
Yeah, these were two-month obligations, and the king had his own loyal, you know, soldiers, but it was a smaller portion. I mean, and you couldn't keep large standing armies at this point in history. You couldn't afford it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. That was quite a fight. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking about the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Chris, you got to talk to us about Battle Digest. I was just reading again part of the book that you published. It's a great deal. Talk to us about Battle Digest and how people can plug in.
Yeah. So my passion is simplifying military history, turning these great battles into, you know, more coherent stories to get to the essence of what happened. And so I do these battles and I put them all together. It's called Battle Digest. So your listeners just have to go to battledigest.com. They can subscribe and get one every quarter, or they can even buy a book. I put 12 of them in a book called 12 Battles Every American Should Know. And as you know, Dennis, it's a great, simple summary that gets to all the key aspects of these battles. So you really feel like you know what happened.
Chris, thank you. Thanks for your great review of some real history that affects our nation and for being a great member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I'm glad we're friends. This works great.
Yeah, me too. I appreciate it, Danny. It's always fun, and I like to share some history.
Indeed. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. Suppose you are forced to defend yourself or your family. This can happen to anybody, so it's important to be prepared. You will likely face legal bills. Even if you're in the right in a self-defense situation, there will almost always be an investigation and you may find yourself in the legal system. U.S. Law Shield is here to help you through these events. Experienced U.S. Law Shield attorneys are ready to defend you 24/7, 365. To sign up, go to uslawshield.com and use promo code FRONTLINES.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
In business for over 30 years with over $1 billion in sales, Universal Coin and Bullion is my go-to source for gold and silver coins. And right now, they're offering our listeners a newly minted 0.99 fine 1 ounce 2024 silver American Eagle coin for just $27. Call 800-UCB-GOLD, 800-UCB-GOLD, or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Hey, I do some coin collection. Universal Coin is the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Send your thoughts to me at frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Marine parents Bob and Sarah are concerned that our nation will not be able to handle the wars in Ukraine and Israel and the horrible storm damage here.
Bob and Sarah, we just have to put America first. I hope we can do all three, but if not, we have to do America first.
And Marcy, the sister of a serving airman, is really worried about all the illegal aliens here, especially since we're suffering from the huge storms.
Marcy, add to the illegals and the storm damage our huge national debt. We need to cut spending. We should start by taking care of Americans and sending the illegals home. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 22 October 1797, the first parachute jump of note was made by André Jacques Garnerin from a hydrogen balloon 3,200 feet above Paris, France. Leonardo da Vinci conceived the idea of the parachute in his writings, and the Frenchman Louis-Sébastien Lenormand fashioned a kind of parachute out of two umbrellas and jumped from a tree in 1783, but Garnerin was the first to design and test parachutes capable of slowing a man's fall from a high altitude, which I guess that is the whole idea behind a parachute, to slow a man's fall, don't you think, Colonel?
That was always my thought when I jumped.
Yes.
And it always worked. And on the 25th of October, 1862, during our Civil War, a sarcastic President Lincoln wired General George McClellan, quote, "I have just read your dispatch about sore-tongued and fatigued horses. Will you pardon me for asking what the horses of your army have done since the Battle of Antietam that fatigue anything?" End quote. Lincoln was clearly out of patience with McClellan. The president had ordered him to pursue Confederate General Robert E. Lee into Virginia after Antietam on the 17th of September. But McClellan dallied for over a month. A little over a week later, Lincoln replaced McClellan with Ambrose Burnside.
And then later, he replaced Burnside.
Yes.
On 23 October 1921, in the French town of Chalons-sur-Marne, an American officer selected the body of the first unknown soldier to be honored among the approximately 77,000 U.S. servicemen killed on the Western Front in World War I.
And on 22 October 1942, during World War II, Major General Mark Clark met in Algeria with French officials loyal to the Allied cause, as well as resistance fighters, regarding the launch of Operation Torch, the first Allied amphibious landing of the war. It was decided at a conference in Washington that an Allied offensive against Rommel and the German army in North Africa could be launched. The details were debated for months as we objected to an early British operation, which was deemed costly and ineffective and was scrapped. We were also anxious to engage the Germans in Europe, not Africa. An ultimatum was even proposed. Unless the British support an Allied cross-channel attack, that is, an invasion of France, we would turn our attention to the Pacific and maintain only a defensive posture against Germany. President Roosevelt was unwilling to issue such an ultimatum to our allies, and our military leaders were ordered to work out a compromise operation for North Africa, and they did.
And on 25 October 1944, during the World War II Battle of the Leyte Gulf, the Japanese deployed kamikaze, divine wind, suicide bombers against American warships for the first time. It proved costly to both sides.
That just sounds yucky to me. On the 24th of October 1951, President Harry Truman finally proclaimed that our nation's war with Germany, which began in 1941, was officially over. A peace treaty was signed. Fighting had ended in 1945.
And on 21 October 1967 in Washington, D.C., nearly 100,000 people gathered to protest our war effort in Vietnam. Polls that summer revealed that, for the first time, American support for the war had fallen below 50%. A group of hippies tried to exorcise the Pentagon. The brainchild of Abby Hoffman, the plan was for people to sing and chant until it levitated and turned orange, driving out the evil spirits and ending the Vietnam War.
I'll bet it didn't turn orange either, but I wasn't there. And on 25 October 1971, a dramatic reversal of its longstanding commitment to the nationalist Chinese government of Taiwan and a policy of non-recognition of the Communist People's Republic of China, our UN representative voted to seat the People's Republic of China as a permanent member. Over our objections, Taiwan was expelled.
And on 23 October 1983, a suicide bomber drove a truck filled with 2,000 pounds of explosives into a U.S. Marine barracks at the Beirut International Airport. The explosion killed 220 Marines, 18 sailors, and 3 soldiers. A few minutes later, a second bomber drove into the basement of the nearby French paratroopers' barracks, killing 58 more people. Intelligence determined that the instructions for the attack came from Iran. 4 months after the bombing, American forces left Lebanon without retaliating.
I wonder why we didn't. And on 25 October 1983, we invaded Grenada. President Ronald Reagan, citing the threat posed to American nationals on the Caribbean nation by the nation's Marxist regime, ordered the Marines to invade and secure their safety. There were nearly 1,000 Americans in Grenada at the time, many of them students at the island's medical school. In a little over a week, Grenada's government was overthrown. And that's military history for today. Well, what would you do if you were forced to defend yourself or your family? These situations can happen to anybody, so it's important to be prepared. In addition to being the worst day of your life, you can face a large amount of legal bills. Even if you're in the right in a self-defense situation, there will almost always be an investigation, and you can find yourself in the legal system. It's the way the law works. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They're here to help people through events who never thought that would happen to them. With their Legal Defense for Self-Defense program, experienced attorneys are always ready to defend you 24/7, 365. To begin your membership or learn more, go to uslawshield.com and use the promo code FRONTLINES. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, in the early hours of Wednesday morning, a Missouri resident faced a harrowing situation when burglars attempted to break into his house near the Lake of the Ozarks. The homeowner shot one of the intruders and then informed 911. The second suspect managed to flee the scene. Police arrived and gave medical aid to the criminal, but he didn't survive. The incident sparked a wave of reactions on social media, particularly on the sheriff's office Facebook page. Many commenters expressed little sympathy for the deceased suspect, posting comments like, quote, "The Ozarks is the wrong place to find out or win a prize," one commenter noted. Another echoed the sentiment with, "Try that in a small town," end quote.
Thanks, Colonel. I've lived in rural America for most of my life, and I can tell you that there are some core differences between the city and the country. Let's go over them right now. First, most country folks have guns and know how to use them. Guns are just a way of life for us country folk. We grow up with them. We hunt with them. As a kid, we get a BB gun, then a .22 rifle, then a shotgun, and then a deer rifle. In country folk, a gun is just a tool that we use for fun, for food, and for self-defense. It's like a table saw to a carpenter or a chainsaw to a logger. Are guns dangerous? Absolutely. But guns are supposed to be dangerous, and if yours isn't dangerous, then take it back to the factory for a refund because yours is defective. City people are different, and I'm generalizing here, I know. City folks have different experiences with guns. They don't get a BB gun at age 9 because there's no place to safely shoot it. By the time they reach adulthood, they've never shot a gun, and their only experience with guns is crime, like drive-by shootings, muggings, and drug deals gone bad. So it only stands to reason that city people have a negative attitude about guns. To them, guns equal crime, therefore gun owners equal criminals. Now, having said that, where does most crime occur? Well, in the city, of course, where honest, good citizens either don't want a gun or aren't allowed to own one. Folks, when you rob in the country, you can expect to be met with the working end of a firearm. It's part of our culture that urban dwellers have largely and sadly lost. We also watch out for each other. Why? Well, because we know each other. In many cases, we went to school together and watched our families grow up. So when a criminal tries to hurt our neighbor, we take it personally. We band together and watch each other's backs. What does that mean to city folk? Well, it means you need to start a neighborhood watch. Become friends with your neighbors, have a block barbecue, go to a shooting range and take classes together. The day of surviving without friends is over. As society degrades and crime runs rampant, you're going to need backup. So you city folks, now is the time to get acquainted, to get organized, and to get trained and armed. It's no longer an option, it's a necessity.
You're very correct. Our movie of the month is The Attendant. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on Frontlines of Freedom or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.